Eagle has landed.
3, 2, 1, release, release, release.
Anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard,
normal,
or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
Roger that.
Hello and welcome to the Anomaly Podcast. I'm Jen, and this week's Anomaly is the Men of Trek panel that I've been promising to put up for 3 years. It's from the 2012 Austin Comic Con presented by Wizard World. I think it's safe to say that was an epic con. This panel includes Michael Dorn, Brent Spiner, Jonathan Frakes, and LeVar Burton. Will Wheaton would have been a part of it, but he wasn't feeling well and ended up skipping out on this one. At the end of the panel, I'll return and talk to you a little bit about what's coming up next for Anomaly, and give you some contact information and sign off. Until then, here's that panel.
Syracuse, New York, cold, stormy, windy. The show had barely come on the air. Reluctant fans filled the sparsely attended audience. They resented us because they were big fans of the original show. I was nervous. It was my first convention ever. The audience was cold. I was cold. I was waiting in the dealer's room at a table that was selling the old action figures, the younger, thinner version of all of us. And they had, Worf for $30 and Geordi for $35 and limited dialogue data for $45. And Wally was $50. And at the end of the table was a sign that said, buy any action figure, get Riker free. So to that day.
So, LeVar, what was your first convention experience?
Who said that?
You're a new moderator.
My first convention experience. I got a mic for you guys.
Yeah.
My first convention experience was scary. In as much as I had heard about Star Trek fans. And in fact, considered myself one. And yet I was unprepared for the love.
You could call it.
The enthusiasm was overwhelming. Is that jazz hands?
Yeah!
Now do the wave. Love you guys!
And now barrel roll.
Your first convention experience, and please keep the answer short.
It's like having a roommate.
Yeah. It was a cold night in Zimbabwe.
You know what? My first convention was in New York City. I had no idea what to expect. I prepared. I did an entire routine. I wrote like I thought I was Eddie Murphy or something. Ridiculous. And it went really well. And then I offended somebody by something I said. Had no idea I was doing that. I was, of course, trying to be amusing. I'm sure I'll offend someone today as well. But then she wrote me, and you really hurt my feelings. And then other people wrote me saying, why did you hurt that girl's feelings? Then the president wrote me. So it wasn't the best experience of all time, but I'm hoping this one will be a little better. Mr. Dorn, could you tell us about your first
Well, actually, I was in New York, 1988, and it was a room about this size, this part, maybe a little bit smaller. And they said, and now, ladies and gentlemen, Michael Dorn. And I walked down the center of the aisle, and people were looking past me.
Some things never change.
Don't worry.
So there weren't that many Chips fans in the house then?
Oh, God. They were just getting out of rehab. And I don't remember anything after that because I think I was just overwhelmed by the amount of it. But you know, finally they looked up and went, "Oh my God, it's a black guy." But that was like after that I don't remember. I just remember it was this wave of like you know laughter and everything. Oh, God, this is good. So
I thought maybe just a second before we got the first question, let you guys talk a bit about Rick Colby passed this last week.
Yeah, Rick.
Rick the Baron.
Rick Colby, yeah. One of our favorites. He was one of the directors that could take our crowd.
Yeah.
That could really go in there and work with us and wasn't thrown by the laughter and the fun that we're having. So
I mean, just as they know about this?
I was going to say,
Rick Colby was a director on the show. He directed several episodes. Then Rick Colby.
Including the finale.
He did all the things. And he did the pilot of Voyager.
Sadly passed away this week, and he was a great guy. We really enjoyed him, a terrific director and a wonderful personality.
Love Rick, yeah.
So,
and not a bad dancer.
No.
Although the final episode, it's too bad we have to, that was the last time that I saw him. He did the final episode, he had this idea, and we all had the same thing. It was an idea that he was going to have us drinking tea in the observation lounge. Mm-hmm.
In the observation
lounge. Like, all of a sudden we show up, never happened in 7 years, 100 and something episodes, and the little teacups, little dainty teacups, sitting there. And we went, what's this? He said, I think it's a good idea that you guys are drinking tea. Mm-hmm. And we all, all of us in our different way went, what?
Well, not really. I mean, you said, I'm not doing this.
No, I think I said, Wart doesn't drink tea. I haven't drank tea in 7 years. Why would I start now?
I have a story about Rick Colby you may or may not know.
Okay.
I shadowed him when I was trying to learn how to direct. One of the things that I discovered that he did in all the episodes of our show and all of the episodes of Hunter and all the shows that he had ever directed was somewhere in some set there was an iris.
Huh.
In honor of his wife, his name was Iris. So if you look at any Vinrick Colby directed episode of television, there will be an iris.
Wow. I thought that was very fantastic.
Until
he divorced.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've had trouble sneaking a genie into every shot, but I've tried.
There's a pair of jeans in every episode. Hey, let me ask a question, if I could. Last night we did this panel. Wait, last question. I think we did a panel last night, all of us, and at the very beginning, the audience was asked to put their phones away and any cameras or phones or anything like that. I'm just curious, was it on YouTube today? Anybody know?
Yes.
Yes, right? And this will be on YouTube.
Oh, of course, yeah. Yeah. I just want to know if that was effective at all. Clearly it wasn't.
Yes, Brent, I think we should do questions.
Okay.
I'm Trish.
Hi, Trish.
Trish.
I have a disability in my left arm called Erb's palsy, and I was just wondering what y'all's charity work is like, what y'all are involved in.
I give to your charity. It's how we know each other, isn't it?
Children's diabetes. My dad was a diabetic for 50 years, so we've raised money for children's diabetes, which is actually
I work with several literacy organizations. First one. Also big on organ donation.
Living proof.
Recipient of a living related donor kidney. Sign those forms when you apply for driver's license. In the event of your demise, let others live. Not that I'm advocating for your deaths.
But should they occur? You want your organs.
You want your organs.
I tend to lean towards the feeding people, charities like America's First Harvest and things like that, where it just seems preposterous to me that in this country, in this world, anybody has to be hungry.
You're here.
There are a lot of diseases that are very difficult to conquer and require a lot of money and research, but that's a no-brainer. That's easy. We've got food. We've got plenty to feed people. It shouldn't happen. Anyway, there you go.
I do the homeless shelter. There's a place in that in the
Yeah, hi everybody. You know, first of all, thank you guys. And my name is Debbie. And I wanted to just...
You wrote your question down?
Yeah, I did, but I'm going to revise this. Cause, I did, because
like
it's
to
too long. It's
back
too long.
And rewrite it?
I know. Well, okay, let me just read it. Okay. Yeah, okay. I said, I've been a fan of Star Trek since the original series. I'm that old. Mainly because its message of a more peaceful universe, you know, being achieved through greater respect for and acceptance of our differences reflects what I believe personally. This is really serious, knowing that this was Gene Roddenberry's vision, and you guys have really done really great in promoting his vision. What is the benefit to us as individuals and as a society to increasing gender, ethnic, and other kinds of diversity in the entertainment world?
Entertainment?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? I wasn't...
Basically, what do we gain when we see diversity?
We get a society that really functions a lot better. I can't begin to explain to you the importance of seeing oneself represented in the popular culture in the formulation of one's own self-image. And it's true. My kids are growing up in a different world where they see people who look like them everywhere, in movies, on television, in magazines.
In the White House.
In the White House. And for a young person, it is critically important that they grow up in a world where they see themselves represented in the popular culture. It just gives one a better sense of who they are and what their place is in society.
First and foremost, thank you for creating four iconic characters that we have loved and admired over the years. You guys are all awesome. My question is to all of you. In Star Trek, the 24th century, you have some phenomenal technology like tricorders, the holodeck, so on and so forth. If you could take some of that technology from the 24th century and bring it here into the 21st century, what would you bring and why?
I'd bring an iPad. Oh, wait, that's already
happening. It is already happening. I mean, I just did a thing for a group called the XPRIZE. And it was in San Diego because they arranged the financing for manned space, a civilian manned spaceship. And but now their next thing is, they have, and Qualcomm apparently is financing it. They want a medical tricorder that will give 13 different readouts with a scan, and it has to be affordable to the consumer. You have to hold it in your hand, and they've given 3 years to anybody to come up with it, and the prize is $10 million. And they seem to think it's going to happen. I said, "Is it likely?" And they said, "Very likely." They think the technology's really all there. Somebody just has to put it together. So I think little by little, anything that's imagined in science fiction can come to be and has come to be. We had flip phones coming out of Captain Kirk's pocket. We had Captain Picard with a pad in his office. We had Uhuru with a Bluetooth in her ear, you know.
What about the holodeck?
I think the holodeck is next.
Community!
Actually, I think transporting is the baby. I mean, if we can go from one place to another.
What did it feel like when you beamed into a place? Let's say if you beamed into Risa.
Can I be honest with you?
Yeah, be honest.
It hurt.
More when you left the ship or when you landed on the planet?
But the thing is, it hurts more as they come back together.
Yeah.
It's nothing
really, but... Did you find that it was different when Colm transported you as opposed to some other...
No, I prefer a woman, honestly.
Yeah.
Cool, thanks.
Hi. Some nights here in Austin at the Alamo Drafthouse, they have these Star Trek debates. Like, and the most fun one was Kirk versus Riker, ultimate ladies' man of the galaxy.
My money's on Big Willie.
During the debate, there were like a lot of different people there. Riker, you know, like a lot of different types of people that he was interested in. Anyway, my question is, who is your
Kirk one?
Your most memorable love interests in the show for all of you?
You mean on camera or off?
I very proudly kept my relationship with my Amzadi, Counselor Troy, alive through 7 seasons. In spite of the writers' insistence that we ignore it. And then, 4 movies later, they decided it was a good idea for us to get married. Not that I didn't go to that Klingon ship and have 2 Klingon women.
I was just trying to forget.
Yeah. And I compartmentalized that whole experience, which I think was probably the best way to handle it. One or both.
I didn't really appreciate it until somebody did this thing on YouTube where they showed like 8 minute segments of the Worf and Dax romance. No, I just didn't think it was, you know, I mean, it was cool and all that stuff, but it didn't hit me how involved it was in terms of the storylines that I had and how it was really significant. I liked that a lot.
Jordy didn't have sex in there.
He came close.
What about the hologram?
Oh, my God.
think we're all sort of waiting to hear from the fully functional. Somehow, by the end of the episode, I had it in my hand. Don't know how that happened, but...
That's why you do that downstairs.
Hey, that's the answer to your question. You got more than you bargained for.
Hi, my name is Harmony, and I just wanted to thank you so much for your kindness and your willingness to be here. You're very accommodating to fans, and I really appreciate that. My question was, what, if either on screen or off screen, was your most crisp moment that you still remember today?
On screen or off screen?
For the 7 years, or for all the movies, too? Or
for our whole lives?
Either.
About our loved relationships.
My favorite memory is the day that it finally happened when Michael Dorn, as Worf, took the raw egg and crushed it on Patrick's head. And the yolk and albumin dripped down. Fact or fiction? Beyond belief. Fact. The footage you're about to see is extremely graphic. You did that. Remember when you did that, Mike? You did that.
Sorry, Tom. You know what? You wanted it so bad.
I did so bad.
You know what? There were so many moments. Yeah. You know, there were 7 years. Lunch was good. Lunch.
Even breakfast was.
There were two moments that just in terms of laughing, and that's one where I think I told the story before is where Brent, who never cracks up, went in to see Jordy, and Jordy is dead on a slab. He's dead.
He was in the background. You could see him in the background.
Yeah. Dead with a little blanket over his, you know, over his body. I mean, obviously. And I walk in with Brent, and Marina's there, and he goes up to the nurse, and it's not like in a different room. He's seizing.
I can see over her shoulder. I can see him laying on this slab.
And Brent said, "Nurse Ogawa, may I speak to Jordy?" It was one of those moments where we, for 20 minutes, we just couldn't do it. And the jokes were flying and all that type of stuff. And then the second one was laughter. I mean, it was a bunch of laughter. It was when Brent and I were on our worst behavior. Patrick was directing this.
Oh,
this
movie. The Western.
Yeah. No, that was bad, too. Patrick was directing Ensign Rowe.
Yeah.
And they went back to, you know, and she was undercover, and we walk into this bar, and we see Ensign Rowe right over there.
She's in the corner. She's, I can see her. We walk through the door.
And we walk in, and he and I are going, excuse me, and you know, Brent's up. We're looking for a dark-headed woman. She has little ridges on her nose. She's about, and we're describing her, and everybody's going, we don't know. And she's right there. So Brent and I decided, but we decided we're going to walk in like two stupid guys. At first, they were two stupid English guys. And then two stupid German guys. The English guy said, "Hey, we're looking for a woman, and she looks like her." That was funny. That lasted a long time. Then the German guy says, yeah, we're looking for a German girl, and we on and on and on.
Patrick was so angry.
After we, maybe an hour of this, and as we did it, Brent and I were just having a great time. We were laughing. And all of a sudden, Patrick's ex, Wendy, she walked in, and she knew us, and we did it all over again for her. We said, "Hey, Wendy, come here, watch this.
It's really funny.
It's really funny." But it was. But I agree with everybody. I mean, they're just. I think the whole 7 years was a moment.
It was.
And that's where things were. Thank you.
Thanks. We're at our 10-minute warning.
Hello.
Hi.
My question is actually for Mr. Dorn. I've been trying to formulate this for a week so I can get it out correctly. I think in DS9, the episode Far Beyond the Stars is one of the most kind of important episodes that Star Trek's ever done. What was the experience like making that, and did you like not having to go into makeup?
Oh, that one, yes.
Why were you wearing makeup?
I was thinking, you remember what the episodes are?
It was one of the most important.
That wasn't one where Patrick played the flute, was it?
No.
I'm so sick of hearing how important that episode was.
You mean one where he played the flute?
That one was where we all went back in time to 1940s, 1950s, and everybody was out of makeup.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Everybody in the show.
I've been doing that.
I know. That's you know what I mean? It was a good episode, but all I remember is not having to be in makeup. And I was walking around in like a really cool suit and a hat, and I was going, "Hey, how you doing?" That's all I remember is just not having to put makeup on, which is great.
Okay, one question.
This is for LeVar. What was it like working with Jimmy Doohan in Relic?
Oh, I love Jimmy Doohan.
Uh-oh.
He was my favorite engineer, aside from myself. it was Relic. You know, it was a great experience. One of the memories that I will really, you know, hold near and dear to my heart forever. I also enjoyed the cocktails.
Hi, so I'm of the age and with wonderful enough parents that I don't remember a time when there wasn't Star Trek in my life, and also not when there wasn't Reading Rainbow.
I have both in my drawer. I have boxers and briefs.
Yes.
I have briefs on.
Are you certain you want to know?
I think the world needs to know.
My wife is not going to like this. But I'm going to share with you anyway. Because she's not here.
You started it yesterday.
Whenever I wear jeans, it's always commanded. Oh! And not an unpleasant one, I must say.
It's about to. I've been wearing the same pair of underwear for a long time. I don't even know whether they're boxers or briefs.
What work was like. This is exactly what it was like for 7 years and four movies. From 6 a.m. till 8 p.m. Midnight on Fridays. Oy, oy, oy. Dorney?
I always wear Marina's underwear.
Last question, guys. I don't know how we top that, but...
I have to go in a couple minutes because I have a plane to catch, but they're going to stay in...
Here we go. It'll be boring, but...
Won't be as fun.
So you guys have said how you've kind of been pain in the asses for the directors of the show. Jonathan, how is the transition to becoming a director?
We were all guilty. As it turned out, we were all guilty. My friends were very supportive when I started to direct. One thing about being a pain in the ass on the show or at work, the reason we were able to behave the way we behaved was because everyone in our company showed up prepared. I work on a lot of television shows now where that's not the case. So by being prepared, as Marina says, by knowing your lines and hitting your mark and not burning into the furniture, we were able to play between takes. And also because often the tone of the scenes was serious. And so we had to act serious. And we were generally more playful than our characters. It was because we were prepared that we were able to play.
Taking group photos earlier, the whole bunch of us, and a couple came in, and actually they're sitting right over there, and he got down on his knee in front of everybody, and this couple right here presented her with a ring, and they're now engaged.
Proposed in the photo
wall?
Yeah,
proposed.
There's a photo wall there. The guy came in and he was standing in front of us, and I was getting ready to yell at him. Get this joker out of the way. He goes, hey, you know, I love this. Lay down. What? Yeah, okay, but.
He knelt down.
It was amazing. Great moment. Nice moment. I'm glad I was a part of that.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody. Sorry to leave you now, but...
One of my favorite guys was John Anderson.
Oh,
the
He played my father in North and South.
Did he really?
Yeah. He just died.
Did he? Oh,
yeah.
You know who I loved? Terry O'Quinn.
Oh, Terry O'Quinn? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was in
yes.
Yeah. He was in Juggernaut.
Yes. And David Ogden Stiers.
David Ogden Stiers.
And then there are a couple of actors who did our show who claimed never to have been on the show.
Ashley Judd.
Even though we have filmic evidence. Terry Hatcher.
Terry Hatcher.
Claims she never did the show.
Corbin Burtson did, and I'm confused by that still.
Yeah. The cool thing is that there were actors that you watched your whole life. That were on the show. Just, oh my God. In fact, John Anderson,
yeah.
He played the old couple that were on the planet, the survivors.
Right? Paul yeah. Winfield in Dharma.
Dharma.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did Colby direct that episode too?
He might have done.
He may have.
I love that. Yeah.
Did Colby direct that episode there?
I think he did.
I think he
might have.
He did.
Google it.
Somebody can do that in 5 seconds.
Cool. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
So I just wanted to know, like, what did you not like having to do, like, on the set? Or
I hated my spacesuit.
I was not very fond of the visor.
I think my least favorite was the Robin Hood.
You were not a merry man. You were not a merry man.
Because I keep saying, and I put on those things, and I'm looking at everybody's, oh, Michael, this is going to be cute. I keep saying, every time they say this is going to be cute, I just know it's going to be most exciting. And it was, you know, the tights and the scarlet and the hat with the feather, and I keep saying I look like a Klingon pimp.
I thought that was something to look for you.
I actually did too.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you got it.
Oh, I couldn't stand it. When I said I'm not a merry man, I was really like.
Just ask my mandolin.
Just ask your mandolin.
You know, Patrick wouldn't let us sit in his chair ever on the set. That was a little uncomfortable.
I don't know. You know, the chair was ergometrically designed to fit his British.
He didn't want anybody else's
buttocks
in his seat?
Yes.
And when he wasn't looking, we all sat.
Semi-truck full of $85,000 worth of costumes. And the guy who stole it found someone who had a copy of Kit, the car from Knight Rider, and he was going to trade the $85,000 true story, trade the $85,000 worth of Star Trek costumes for the Kit car, and they were to meet in the desert. And they had a meeting point. It's like Craigslist. Meeting point, Mary Howard went with the FBI, and they busted the guy in the desert full of, a hand, you know, handful of Star Trek costumes and a talking car.
So,
see, that's the kind of stuff you learn at these conventions.
So, $85,000 worth of Star Trek costumes, one kit car, that's kind of like buy any cast member, get a ride for free.
Yeah.
I really like the underwear question. Oh my gosh, I think that's the funniest one I have heard since. That convention was the very first legit convention we'd ever been to. Before that, in the 90s, I went to one little Star Trek convention. I had just graduated from high school, and John DeLancey was there. After that one, the only other convention I've been to is one called Clockwork Con in Austin, which was only a one-time thing. It was for 2 days, and that was it. It hasn't returned. We did report on that one in 2011, 2012, and that's in the feed if you want to listen to it. Also, we did a report on Austin Comic Con 2012, 2013, and 2014. They're all video, and they're chock full of cosplay pictures and reports on the things that we saw there. There are a couple of things coming up down the road. I promised you last week that I would be recording a Outlander-themed episode with my friend Jenny McNiven, who's an archaeologist. And she's been doing a little bit of research on standing stones so that we can talk to you about that, because that's a big deal in Outlander. That's how Claire and others like her can travel to the past. So we're going to talk a bit about the historical accuracies with regards to standing stones. And in, I think she's going to, we're going to try to do a little series of those based on Outlander. She's of Scottish descent. I think she told me she has some ancestors that fought at Culloden. She knows a bit about that, and we're going to talk about that too. And then also, my friend Sith Jen, we refer to her as Sith Jen because she likes to dress as a Sith, and my friend Anne, who does Project Reroll and This Is Art, they're going to join me, and we're going to talk about PAX South. Anne is also planning to attend PAX East, which I think is this weekend, so we're going to have to wait for her to return from that. And then we're going to tell you about PAX and why it's cool and why you should go and what kind of experience we had when we went a couple of months ago. The other thing I wanted to tell you about is a little project that Angela and I are working on for Anomaly. Sometimes we have a little bumper before the Anomaly definition starts at the beginning of our show, and we like to switch it out. We have a grand plan for one that includes the voices of our listeners, voices from all over the world with all different accents, both male and female. We want you to be a part of the opening of our show. So far, 5 or 6 people have sent some in. They all are American or Canadian. And we would like to include more voices. So I know there are people listening in Australia, New Zealand, Japan, Ireland, Scotland, England, France, Russia, Norway, Sweden, South America. I think there's only one. I think Brazil. If you guys could do us a favor and record your voice saying the word anomaly and the phrase, I am an anomaly, and spell it out, A-N-O-M-A-L-Y. Use whatever inflection you want to use. Whatever your accent is, it's beautiful to us, and we want it to be a part of the show. So if you're feeling up to it, you can record your voice on your smartphone and email it to us at girlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z at gmail.com. You can call our voicemail line at 432-363-4742. It's just a comment line. No one's going to answer, don't worry. Or if you have a laptop, an iPad, whatever, use that device and record your voice, and we'll make it a part of our show. Our plan is to switch them up every episode. We want to be able to include different ones from time to time. So if you can help us out, we'd really appreciate it. The other thing is I'm experimenting with my capability of putting an episode up each week. Now, it's been pretty difficult for Angela and I to record and edit and produce a podcast to put up in the feed each week because we're busy moms and full-time employees of the same company, and it's hard sometimes for our schedule to jive. Also, I do a lot of work on post-production and in making everything flow right and introducing some background music, and sometimes I record clips and things like that, and that takes a little bit of time. But Anomaly is turning 8 years old, and we have a backlog of episodes that do not exist in our feed right now. So I could be putting up a classic Anomaly episode, and also supplementing that with maybe an interview, an Anomaly supplemental, including the one that Angela and I usually record once or twice a month, a video and a regular audio podcast. We can try. And if you like that idea, please let me know, because that'll encourage me to keep trying. Because like I said, it's a lot of work, and I just want to make sure that I'm able to be consistent with it. You can email me your thoughts on that at girlygeeks@gmail.com. Like I said before, girlygeeks@gmail.com. You can call our voicemail line. You can tweet us at Anomaly Podcast. You can jump on the Facebook group and tell us there. There are lots of different ways you can get in contact with us. Not to end the show on a sad note, but we lost Leonard Nimoy this week, and we want to be able to do a tribute episode, but we're going to have to wait till Angela gets back from maternity leave. She's due to have her little one any day now, and that takes a few weeks to get used to, too. So I think we've decided that when she does return, we are going to do an episode on The Wrath of Khan, and then maybe we'll talk about Leonard Nimoy and how he's been an inspiration to us. We'll see. But that's in the works, too. And I just wanted to close by saying that TOS was the first Star Trek that I ever watched. I watched it with my dad, and Mr. Spock was the one that made the impression on me the most. He was different, and it was cool. And I think I really liked his off-screen generosity and graciousness and kindness to the fans. And I think a lot of people could learn from that. Thank you for listening. I hope you share this episode with your friends and come back next week. Bye.
Support Anomaly through feedback and donations by visiting anomalypodcast.com.
That's A-N-O-M-A-L-Y
podcast.com.
Thank you for listening to Anomaly. If you like what you heard, please tell your friends. Tweet or share a link and spread the anomalous word. Stay up to date on all that's Anomaly by visiting anomalypodcast.com. Subscribe to our shows through iTunes, Zune, through Stitcher Smart Radio, and wherever podcasts are found. Please support the Anomaly you love by becoming an official sponsor of the Anomaly Podcast, or consider a monthly donation. All donations go towards hosting and podcast upgrades. If you can't afford to support us through sponsorship or donations, no worries. You can help us out by rating or reviewing our show through iTunes, Zune, or Stitcher Smart Radio. Those stars help a lot. The original Anomaly theme song and outro are by Angela's husband, Jim, and his old punk band, The Illuminati.
Gamma Quadrant Golf Clap.
Hey, did you like this episode? Did you like the episode the other month, or the other week, or the one from last year even, because we've been going an awful long time? If you do, then phone us on 432 363 4742 and tell us what you think. Of course, be interesting if you can. Don't be one of these people who just phone up and leave really long pauses, or you just drone on and on and on, because who wants to listen to that? I don't, and I'm having to read this message. So go on, phone us up. See if you can do better than what I can. See, I'm very good, kind of. Well, I'm not really. I'm having to do it for food and shelter, because they keep poking me with sticks, the women at Anomaly. They do. They make me do these things. They make me sit here in front of this microphone, and they beat me. So please phone up on 432 363 4742 and help me. We'll be right back.
end.